Welcome to the Natural Running Network. My name is Richard Diaz, and I'll be your host. What I hope to do is introduce you to some amazing athletes, luminaries from the sports science community, and as come to be expected, I'll also provide some highly opinionated rants on all aspects of endurance sport and my current favorite, obstacle course racing. So sit tight, grab a cup of coffee, and let's do this. Once again, I've got my dear friend Joseph Gray on the line with us, and Joseph Gray is a phenom when it comes to mountain running. He won the World Mountain Running Championships in 2016. He's the American record holder for the Mount Washington Road Race, and in 2016 August, he won the Pikes Peak Ascent in a time of 2:05, which is the fastest climb in, geez, a long time. Joe, say hello to our audience, please.
Hey, how are you doing, everybody? Thanks, Richard, for having me again. It's been a while. So, thank you for everybody listening in. Appreciate the support.
Joe, so you got quite a year behind you. You won the World Mountain Running Championships. I mean, I can go through a laundry list of things that you've done over the course of the last year with great success. Man, my hat's off to you. I'm very proud of you, my brother.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Of all the things that you went through last year, what do you lean most heavily on? What is the thing that was on your bucket list that you wanted to get done and you feel the most proud about?
That's tough. There were about three races last year that were really important for me to come back to and prove to myself, not only, you know, to others, but to myself mostly, that I could perform well at these races. I guess in synchronization, the first one was, well, the Mountain Running Championship was definitely was really important for me and was a big win for me. But just before that, the Pikes Peak, the ascent, last time I did it, I came into the race, I was a little bit beat up. I had a really big mountain race the week before, or not even a week before, about 6 days before. And then I had to do international travel to get back to Pikes. And so I was kind of fried coming into it. And I ran all right. Everyone, you know, a lot of people said I ran well, but I lost to some people whom I know I shouldn't have I shouldn't have lost to. And so I was a little disappointed in myself for just not competing, not being able to compete and putting myself in a position where I could not compete at my best. And so it was important for me to return this year and show myself that I can come here and I can crush this race, and this race is something I can excel at. And so that was the first one. And then the World Championships was the next big one for me, because I had never won the World Mountain Running Championship, and I'd been there. I'd represented Team USA about 9 years in a row. I had led the US team a couple times there, but even then, you know, the men's team, the best team medal we had was silver at that point. And so, and I had led the team for that silver medal. And so this year was real special, especially on the uphill years, because the uphill years are really tough. You know, you get the athletes where it's really about grit and just pure fitness and how much pain you can really put yourself into. Whereas up and down years, you might get an athlete who's just crazy enough to run the downhill fast enough, may not be the most fit athlete there, but just has good technique or is just not afraid of the downhill. So it's not so much about fitness. So, you know, the uphill years, you'll usually get a lot of the Africans and you'll get a lot more top Europeans coming. And so it's a tough year to win it, especially as a team. And so this, you know, that was really special for us to win that. And then, you know, even more so that I was able to win it individually after, you know, 9 attempts being on the team, U.S. team. And so, and then after that, I guess to end the year, the Xterra Championship, I've had, you know, some real up and downs there. You know, one year I was real disappointed because of, they guided me off course and lost the lead, and then I had to fight back to the lead. And then coming into the last 100 meters, there was an official that ran into me, and then, you know, I pretty much like went to a standing still. And so then another athlete almost caught me, and then he caught me right at the line. So then it ended up being called a tie. And so, you know, the one time that I was able to win it, I had to share it with someone. And then I went back the next year and I got my butt handed to me. And so this year, it was really important for me to show up and do something big, because I was going to be going against the same guy that handed me my butt the last time I was there. And so it had been a few years since I'd been back. And so, I came out and, ran a good race and, was able to drop, the athlete who beat me a couple of years ago. And it was a pretty special moment for me, just because, he had beat me pretty handily, and I felt like, it was going to be tough to beat him. And it was a tough race. We went out real hard. We were way ahead of the record pace. But then once you get to the mud, it slowed us down a little bit, but definitely one of the hardest races I've had all year. Definitely a hard fought, championship. Cause that was the Xterra Trail Running World Championship. So yeah, I guess the best, that was kind of the highlights of the year for me, the biggest highlights, and being able to win those two world titles and then come back and just kind of improve upon what I had done in the past at all of those races.
Cool. So just for the novices to the sport, the people that are not real clear on what this is all about, can you give us kind of an overview of what the course is like for the Pikes Peak Ascent?
So Pikes Peak Ascent, it starts at pretty good high altitude, about 6,500 feet or so.
Yep.
And then it goes up almost 8,000 feet to the top of Pikes Peak, which sits at 14,100, I believe.
So it's 8,000 feet of elevation gain over the course of the run.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
And it's tough, once you get, in those last few miles, it's really exposed, it's real dry, and, not to mention you're over 12,000 feet. So it's a real tough, challenging race.
And what is the distance traveled?
13.25 miles.
Okay. And you did it in 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, in reality, I did it in 2:04. What happened was I missed the start. I put my clothes down and I was coming back to get them. And people had, started putting their clothes over there for the shuttle for the top. And I couldn't find my bag. So then the gun goes off and I just threw my stuff off and ran to the start line. And so I was about a minute almost behind the pack at the start. And then, according to my watch, like just my split time, I was 2:04. But, ultimately it didn't matter because, 2:05 was good enough for the day.
Yeah, well, apparently. So it's it. We're looking at 21 years. Is that right? 21 years since someone even got near that time?
I'm not sure. I don't know what the time frame is, but I was happy with the time though. It's a good time definitely on that course, especially now because the course is a lot more rutted out just from all the big rainstorms we've had. But even the last 3 miles are way worse than the first time I ever ran Pikes, just for training when I had visited Colorado Springs years ago. Now you're doing a lot more rock hopping.
Wow.
Back in the day, it was more running.
Wow. Okay, so I got some technical questions for you, if you don't mind. And I promised you I'd stay general. I'm not going to get weird with you. And if something you don't want to answer, don't answer it. And totally up to you. But a couple things I'd like to know. First of all, talk to me about your diet. Are you kind of on a seafood plan? You just kind of eat when you're hungry and no special considerations? Or are you pretty dedicated to a particular path? And if so, what's that look like?
It's kind of strange, but like I really just kind of eat based on cravings. I think there's something to be said about that. If I remember one time I was traveling in Japan for a little while and hadn't had any meat for like 2 days. And all of a sudden I just had this real strong urge for beef and, for steak. And so, the next day I pretty much ate nothing but meat. And, there's days where I'll eat, dessert or ice cream or pie. I just eat kind of whatever I'm feeling like eating. And I just kind of let my body tell me what I need to eat. So I really don't have any like real restrictions. I got a pretty versatile diet in terms of like, there's a lot of stuff that I do like and not a lot that I don't like. And so, I try to keep it that way just cause I know, you know, I'm going to probably travel places where food is different. And if I have a strict diet, then, you know, I'm kind of SOL because I can't get what I want. And so I always try to make sure I can just eat whatever's available, and whatever's like local to that, wherever I am racing or wherever I'm training.
So bottom line, you eat as much as you feel like you need or to satisfy your hunger, and you eat when you feel like you need to eat.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, just let my body tell me what I need to do.
If you had a guess, how many calories you think you get a day?
Oh, man. I remember the other night we had this real hard workout. And, you know, me and my wife, we had dinner. And then I had kind of a taste for some burgers. So we went to this burger place. And I ended up, I was just counting it up. I was just curious. And I don't typically do this, but I was just like curious. How many calories I eat, and I, just for dinner it was over 3,000. And that was only, you know, that was just the first part of dinner, so it was like that wasn't even all the dinner. So I was like, there's no reason for me to keep counting at this point.
You ever eat at the Cheesecake Factory?
Oh yeah.
You know what I hate about that place is they always put the calories next to the meal, you know, on the menu. And you're looking at it and going, no, man, really? There's that many? Oh, nah. And then you eat it anyway, right?
Yeah, I don't even get it. I don't understand why restaurants need to do that. I mean, if you want to know, you know, there should be a file that they can pull up and give it to you. But I don't need to see that when I'm at a restaurant. I want to enjoy my food.
It just craps you out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so you're probably getting on average, let me guess, let's say that through a typical day if training is on point, you're probably getting about 5,000-6,000, you figure?
Yeah, I would say that's probably safe. I mean, definitely after a hard day, you know, it's just hard to stop eating. So I would say that's an easy number to hit when you've been training hard for most people probably.
Yeah.
Or most people who are about my size, I would say. I'm not like the skinniest guy in the world either. So.
Well, I was going to put that into perspective for people listening. So how tall and how much do you weigh?
I'm about 160 and 6'2".
Okay. All right. So that's a pretty good body weight for your size, especially given the sport you're involved in.
Yeah. I mean, I think my BMI is usually around 20, 21. And I feel like I race better when it's there rather than if I was like 18 or 19 and malnourished and on the verge of getting injured.
Let's talk about training volume. I mean, I got a couple of things. These are curiosities of my own, but I'm sure people like to hear this as well. My first question is, do you spend any time anymore training on a track?
Yeah, on occasion. Definitely for cross country season. I'm in cross country season right now, so I'll definitely hop on the track here and there. Not my favorite place to be, but, you know, the group that I run with every now and then they have track work. And so I'll join in on that.
When you are on the track, what's your focus?
You know, focus is really just for me anyway. I mean, it might be different for the other guys, but for me, it's really just about, learning how to run fast, and just being consistent, not having a workout where your times are fluctuating, you know, 6 and 7 seconds. You know, I think you should be very consistent throughout the workout, and a track is a perfect place to do that because you don't have to worry about terrain.
Do you spend any attention dedicated to your actual form while you're running?
Not really. No, not too much. You know, I think for me, what I've found, you know, obviously form does matter, but if you try to tweak it too much, you can definitely, risking injured is a big thing, is when you try to change something too much. But I think the most important thing is to make sure when you're breaking down in form and you're tired, trying to make sure you're still efficient. I mean, I guess that is something that I do pay attention to, and that's sort of like form. But in terms of like, you know, showing video and looking at stuff, you know, looking at my form and really analyzing it. At this point in my career, I don't really do anything like that.
Well, my guess is, given that you have, well, let's face it, we're talking about a 19-time national team member. You've been at this a long time. I wouldn't think that you have to go back to the drawing board very often. I guess the question is more intriguing in respect to those that are trying to figure out how to run, and whether there's some need for it. And I guess I was baiting you a little bit, because I like to believe that the track, and I like to refer to it as flat response. You know, you're not old enough to probably remember the old dials on the receivers of a stereo, but when all the dials are turned to zero, so that you're not having too much influence by tone, balance, bass, it's just what they call flat response. So you essentially, the analogy here is you remove the environment, you remove all the factors that are influencing the way you're moving, so you're basically on a flat surface with no external influences, where you can dial in and work on what happens within you. And a lot of people just don't know how to run well, and as a result, they get injured. So my thinking is that regardless of the type of terrain that you're going to end up running on, somewhere along the way, you need to have that, let's call it a come to Jesus meeting, where you're making a point to get what you're doing correct. Any thoughts on that at all?
Right. Yeah, no, I think you're speaking the truth there in terms of, you know, for me, I don't think I need to work on it right now, you know, here and there, little tweaks and exercises. But for the most part, if you're not getting injured, then, you know, then if it's not broken, then don't, you know, there's nothing to be fixed. However, when you have an athlete who keeps on getting injuries, then you have to try to tweak their form a little bit to figure out what is it that's causing these issues. And, you know, I'm just like anyone else. I've had my injuries and I've had to obviously tweak my, you know, my form and really pay attention to certain things. And then it becomes kind of, you know, nature, and you just do it naturally. And so it's not something that you need to focus on as much anymore. Absolutely. But I would say you're definitely right. Like if you're having injury issues, it's important. And even, you know, as you get older, maybe you're finding it harder to get PRs. And so, making yourself more efficient and working on your form, becomes important.
Yeah, absolutely. The other question I had in respect to essentially training globally, what do you get as an average volume weekly? You know, let's just say that you're in season, but you're not in the heat of competition. What kind of volume are you getting leading up to competition?
It really fluctuates. I mean, you know, in cross country season, it's obviously different than in mountain season, because, you know, in mountain season, 80 miles in a week is pretty sufficient in terms of you're running a lot more slower miles. You're going uphill or you're coming down technical terrain. And so it might take you 2 hours just to run 10 miles. And so you're not going to be running, you know, 140 mile hour weeks, because you would not have a day. You know, you wouldn't have much time in your life. But yeah, so I mean, I would say anywhere from 80 to 110 miles would be, you know, what I see most of the year.
So in most endurance sports where running is the deal, what would you say is kind of a limiting factor volume-wise? I know there's a lot of guys that are under the idea that they can get in 25 miles a week and be successful in events that in and around the half marathon distance. And I don't believe that to be true. What's your thought?
Well, it depends on what their idea of success is. You know, if my idea is just to run 2 hours for a half marathon, sure, I could run 10 miles a week on that. You know, it's no problem. Now, if you want to be the best that you can be, or you're talking about like a professional level athlete or internationally ranked athlete, then yeah, 25 miles a week probably wouldn't cut it for a half marathon.
No, I don't think so either. All right, so my last technical question for you, and I appreciate you've done a good job with this, and so far I'm getting away with it. But my question on terrain. Now, I always hear the term when you read some of these reviews of performances on mountain, the term I hear a lot is bombing down the hill. Now, and I think you've even used it yourself in conversation with me, but when you say bombing down the hill, would you relate that as being a heavy cadence or just diving down, come hither and just trying to keep your legs moving? What would you consider, generally speaking, a good approach to pretty aggressive downhill running?
I would say it's a mixture of the both. If you're talking like a really smooth paved trail, then obviously, you know, heavy being heavy is not a good thing. But when you're talking about an extremely technical course, you're going to have a mixture of both. You're going to have some areas where you're floating through pretty quick, and then we're going to have to get heavy because you're going to be planting or making a twist or a turn that, you know, requires more muscle mass. And so I think I tend to believe, you know, you got to use a little bit of both.
Okay. All right. So to be clear, what you're suggesting, see, now I like to see guys when they're not being influenced by terrain, meaning up or down, that I like to see them floating around 180 strides per minute. So putting it into context, on a downhill, would you say that you, and when I say downhill, let me be more clear. If you were like over, say, 30% grade, 25% grade coming down, would you be above or below around 180 on average?
You'd definitely be below. I mean, if you were that fast, you wouldn't be running. Or if you were able to run with that kind of cadence coming downhill on such a grade, I mean, you would be moving. But that would probably have to be a pretty smooth trail, because if it was technical, it would be pretty difficult to hold that for any, you know, extended period of time. I'm sure you could do it for, you know, 10 seconds, 5 seconds here and there, but it's not something you're going to hold for like, you know, an hour.
Okay. All right. So now I guess the questions for you, Joe, I appreciate your being patient. The strength training component, do you spend much time in the gym? Do you do some functional strength training? You do any weight training?
I've stopped doing that as much. I guess what I've found is if you're putting in enough work with the running, it does tend to help with both of those things. Now, I guess it's different from someone if you're doing a different type of running. You know, if you're doing a running race where you're need, you know, like OCR type running, you know, maybe weights would be more necessary. For running fast, you know, I just don't see the top athletes in the gym. You know, I've spent a lot of time with, you know, some very good runners in my past, and I just don't see them doing that. And it started to make me wonder if maybe that's the reason why, you know, we're overtrained, we're tired a lot of times in the American distance running, because we're focused on things that, you know, other cultures do not focus on. And, you know, it's almost like we're wasting our time. It's inefficient. It's like, you know, get good at what you're doing, and rather than trying to do something that doesn't really, it's not really relevant to your sport.
Okay. That's a good answer. And I think I concur. I think that there's probably the nervous nature of feeling like you're not covering all the bases causes people to do things that are probably inefficient and potentially draining more so than beneficial. I think that.
Yeah. Now, granted, I do think as you compete in more anaerobic type events, anaerobic threshold type events, I think weights can be important. You know, when you see guys getting on the track, running 5K, 3K, mile, I think a little bit of weights could be important for those types of events, because now you're looking at running paces that are very similar to your sprint speed. And so to be able to hold that sprint speed, you do need a lot of power. Now, when you're doing mountain running and trail stuff, a lot of what we do on a day-to-day basis is very similar to weights. And so it's almost like, you know, would a sprinter lift weights every day? Probably not. And it's the same thing. It's like with mountain running, you're already kind of doing somewhat of weightlifting, resistance work almost every day when you're in the trails. And so do you really want to add additional weights and break down those muscle fibers even more? And you know, for me, the answer would be no. Now, maybe it works for some other athletes, but for me, I've found that it's not been beneficial.
Okay. You know, I'm just fascinated by all this, so I ask a lot of questions. Again, I appreciate your patience. Do you find that you have better success with your training if you do split workouts, or do you essentially load your work up in the morning or in the afternoon? Or even a better question might be, what part of the day is best for you?
For hard stuff?
Just commonly, I guess, if you were to put it across the board.
I think I prefer to work out in the morning. I think it works out better for me, just because I'm the kind of person, when I wake up, I'm ready to go. And as the day goes on, you know, the way my diet works, I'm like eating bigger and bigger and bigger meals. And so for me, it just, it's better that I work out harder in the morning than as opposed to at night.
Okay. And you're at altitude now. You live in Colorado, right?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time here. Yep.
And how much time do you spend at altitude? Well, you're probably living at altitude, but I guess altitude's kind of a relative term for you. I think relative for you, 11, 12,000 feet, a little bit of training that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time training up real high most of the year. You know, I have maybe a couple of weeks where I would say up per year where maybe I'm training pretty high, but, you know, getting ready for specific really high altitude races. But for the most part, you know, I'm traveling and, you know, spend, I like to make sure I'm at sea level here and there too, just to make sure I'm getting efficient. With my running, and cause it's tough to be efficient at altitude. You know, you start falling apart pretty quick, when you're running hard. And so, but yeah, most of the year I'm definitely, you know, in Colorado.
Wow. Now, do you use, you know, I talked to you a while back about purchasing a treadmill.
And, right.
Yeah. I'm assuming that sometime or another you managed to land one. And I guess my question is, do you have a treadmill with excessive incline on it?
I don't use that now, but I have one that can go up to, I think,
15% grade.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a believer in treadmills, you know, I mean, many years before I met you, but when I first started getting into mountain running, because I was training in Oklahoma for the first team that I made, I think a lot of my training was in Oklahoma. And then when I went back to Washington, you know, I didn't live in the mountains. And so I used to treadmill a lot and I had some success. You know, I won some races, obviously, and made some national teams and won some national titles. But what I found was I benefited more from kind of avoiding the treadmill. Yeah. and being able to run. I mean, if I could find a hill that was 5%, you know, on dirt, I found that to be more conducive to fast running on a trail as opposed to running on a treadmill. Cause what happened was I have a really good example. So I had been training on a treadmill most of the summer, and then I went to go do my first Euro tour of racing. And, you know, as you know, over there, there's a lot of courses that are, they're very steep. They're technical. They're not like really runnable or smooth. And so the race is going and I'm going good. You know, I'm crushing these guys and I'm running real well. We get to this really steep section near the end. And all of a sudden, because I'm not used to the terrain and I'm not used to running hard for this long on this type of terrain, I'm like falling to the side. I'm wobbling. You know, I'm not running a straight line anymore. And I'm completely just, I'm folded. You know, I'm just out of it. And from that point on, I realized, like, you know, the treadmill, it's a great tool, I guess, if you have nothing to do at all. But even still, it's not the best tool because it's better to be outside and be in the terrain and actually dealing with the elements and, you know, having your feet and your ankle having to change movements and even your hips having to change movements. And so, you know, from that point on, I've always tried to make sure I'm working out outside. And so I've had a lot more success, you know, after those few years, you know, with the shift in my training, making sure that I'm on terrain rather than, you know, counting on a treadmill.
We talked about, I think it was the Mount Washington road race.
Yeah, great example.
Yeah, and that has some really steep parts in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, really steep stuff.
Yeah,
especially
now we're talking about 40% grade thereabouts.
I wouldn't say that much, Rich. I would say you do have some extended periods at like 20, 21. And then, you know, near the end, you have a couple hairpins that are, you know, in the upper 20s, maybe even 30. And then the last, you know, 2 minutes or so, really, really steep, which, you know, that might approach 40%.
Yeah. Now, I guess the reason I'm baiting you, there's a lot of guys that have been chasing down the idea of getting on an incline trainer in, you know, at home, which is pushing 40% grade, and they basically march up this thing. And my theory is that really doesn't transcend very well into better running efficiency or mechanics. What's your thought?
No, I agree with you. One of my buddies, you know, Tim Sennett, obviously.
Yes, sir.
He tagged me in a post, and they were talking about treadmills and the incline trainer thing. And, I said, I don't think that they're not accurate for one. And, outside of what I don't know if I said this too on the comment, but I was saying, I've said this to other people, but I just feel like it doesn't prepare you for competition because, you know, I know a lot of guys who train on treadmills and when it comes time to compete, in real mountain races, they typically are underperformed in terms of what they think they can do. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, you look at an incline trainer, it doesn't calculate elevation gain properly. 40% on incline trainer does not feel like 40% on terrain. The earth feels different. You know, it's very responsive when you're running on a treadmill, but when you're on terrain and dirt or mud or grass, you know, you're losing some of that, you know, balance. You know, there's not that much balance and response. And so you're kind of sinking in a little bit more. And so there's a lot of things that people don't take into account. You know, these trainers, you know, if you're competing for a treadmill incline trainer race, sure, it's a great tool, but there's no races like that and no races that are really going to pay your bills doing stuff like that. And so
yeah.
I don't see it as being efficient.
Well, my theory was that, first of all, when you get fixed on that environment, you're going to change your posture. It just changes access to musculature, and it puts you in a bad place. And you habitually doing it, it can actually make you a worse runner.
Make you slow, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that was my thought. So my theory is, you know, I don't train survivors. If somebody comes to me for help and they're just trying to survive, you got the wrong guy. I want people to perform better than they used to perform and hopefully win. And I just didn't see that as a winning strategy, as a training modality. That's my theory.
Yeah, I see a lot of guys that do that. And it's so funny. I have not seen anybody have real success at it in mountain races. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys in OCR who do it and they probably have some level of success. But when it comes to like real mountain running, they don't have that same success.
Right. It doesn't parlay. It doesn't trade over, does it?
No, not really.
Yeah. So what's up for 2017, man?
2017 is going to be interesting, man. I have a couple, I'm signed to Merrill still. And so there's a couple of new projects that I'm working with them. And one being a footwear, kind of a signature footwear, and
cool.
Just kind of working on that. And then that's something I'm really, really focused on. And then on top of that, just project-wise, there's a couple races and mountains that I'm going to be looking to explore and see how fast I can get up them.
You're talking about Merrill as a sponsor. I love their shoes, by the way.
Oh, good.
I know that historically, I know where you've been. I won't even bring it up, but I know where you've been. As a rule, what is the type of shoe you like to train and race in? And I'm referring to just kind of common structures, and you know what I'm talking about.
For racing, it depends on really the terrain. I am a more of a minimal type. I do like minimal type of shoes for racing, and even on occasion for training. But for example, like Merrill has the All Out. Their All Out Charge is a really good shoe. They've got the new one coming out, which is going to be the Agility Flex line that's coming out. And you know, these are really great shoes for training. They allow the foot to flex naturally, and you know, I like shoes like that let my foot really get a good flex, natural flex. And you know, they have some protection if I'm running. There's a version that has really good protection, which is the Peak, and you know, great for if you need protection on technical terrain. But in terms of racing, the All Out Crush Light, very light, very minimal shoe, definitely lets your feet and your toes splay, and you know, gives your forefoot enough space to splay, and so that you can get that power from your feet and your toes. And so, you know, I like those types of shoes. And for the most part, you know, Merrill's been really great at making shoes like that for me.
I think that's amazing. I really think that's amazing. So I'm sorry to I cut right into you, and I apologize for that, but I just had to get that out. I really wanted to hear your point on the shoe. So tell me, you were talking about what the 2017 is holding. You said you're keeping your deal with Merrell, but what's going on after that?
I'm going to get into hopefully try a couple new races, and then going after a couple records this year that I didn't go after last year. And yeah, a couple national championships I'll be pushing after this year, and just really focusing on trying to, win some titles and just compete, with the best guys. And I'll go over to Europe again and do some big races over there. And I'm excited for it, man. It's going to be a cool 2017. I mean, so far it started off pretty well. Did a little bit of traveling to Switzerland and Mexico to start my season off in cross country, and great experiences, and great look at the culture and the look of those types of races in other countries, because I've only typically done mountain races in Mexico and in Switzerland. So it was my first time doing cross country in these countries, and kind of getting a feel for what that's like there. And being able to do a national championship in Mexico for cross country is really cool.
Yeah. Well, you've been crushing it, no question about it, Joe. And I'm very proud of you. I said it once already, but I'm saying it. By the way, everybody needs to know it's going to be your birthday tomorrow. What are you going to be, a whopping 33 years old?
Yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
33. Yep. I got clothes older than you, dude.
Yeah, man. Well, if I was your age, I could eat that. I could go to IHOP and get that discount, but...
Yeah, you know what I should do is I should run in and get some, and we'll share it, right?
Yeah, that sounds good to me, man.
You probably break the bank too at IHOP, man. I can't imagine trying to push in 6,000 calories with Joe Gray.
Well, when they do the all you can eat pancakes, it's a pretty easy feat to do.
Well, look, man, I appreciate you coming on with me. I've been thinking about you, and I'm gonna keep an eye out for you. Any shout-outs, right? Anything you want to throw out while you got the mic?
I guess thank you to you and people like you who promote the sport and, really focus on the things that matter in the sport. And, thank you to my sponsors and also my fans who have supported me and keep their eyes out for me. And, just keep me in your thoughts, and I'll keep you in mind.
All right, brother. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.